Well, we're carrying on our series in our Vision and Values series. If you're visiting, let me explain that we came up with five vision and value statements, what we wanted to stand for and be as a church when we started a little over 2 years ago. And we thought 2 years in we'd revisit those and encourage ourselves in them, spur each other on, and ask the question, how are we doing in them? Can we do them any better? Are there lessons we need to relearn and see if there are habits we've fallen into we need to change? That sort of thing. Well, we come to the third of those where our vision and value statement is something like... I'm not sure we've actually ever pinned them down very well. We say them in slightly different ways. I think the bulletin said it's a place where everyone's involved. I've usually said it's a place where everyone plays their part. You think of Karis's comments earlier about the body, you see where we're going. The thing is, when people think about church, I think what automatically comes into people's minds is either a building, a church building they see on the corner, or if they know a little bit more about church, it's a meeting. A meeting a little bit like this one, where people sit in rows and face forwards, and things happen in front of them. And they take part in singing and so on, but stuff happens at the front, and you watch, and you are something of an observer, an onlooker. And when you think about other things we do in our culture, where we might sit in rows and all face forward at something happening at the front, I guess we're thinking of things like going and watching a film, or going to a show, or a comedian, or watch a debate, or something. But we're the audience, and we watch. Now, I should probably say, because I'm not going to return to this, I'll say up front, I think it's fine for us to sit in rows and all face forwards. Okay, that's not what I'm on about. But it's not okay if we develop the mindset of onlooker, passive observer of what is happening. If we start to get into that mindset at all, we have completely lost the New Testament picture of church and what it's supposed to be. This passage actually reminds us as it starts of what it's become something of a mantra for me. I keep on telling people that church is more about the quality of our relationships than what we do in our meetings. It's more about the quality of our relationships than what we do in our meetings. And I'm reminded of that just like in verses 8 and 9. We're not going to look at them closely because this really fits with where we were 2 weeks ago in our first vision and value statement about being a loving family. But just glance briefly with me, verse 8. Above all, you know, most importantly, above everything else, what should you do? You should love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Peter's thinking of all the ways we probably hurt each other, which is going to happen in the church. Be involved in church, you're signing up to being hurt in some way, I'm afraid to say, because people may ignore you or not care for you, or say something uncaring or whatever, you will be hurt. And Peter is saying, love each other deeply, because love will cover over all of that sort of stuff. Now, he's picking up on a proverb which contrasts it with resentment. The wise man loves and covers over rather than allows the grievances to build, the resentment to fester. And so you see, we're back to the sort of love among us that we were talking about 2 weeks ago, if you were here. He goes on in verse 9, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Now, when we say the word hospitality, we almost certainly tend to think of giving someone a meal, don't we? You know, you say someone's good at hospitality, what we mean is they're quite a good cook, and they're prepared to have you over to share their cooking. That's what we're talking about. That's probably included, but it's actually a much deeper, a much more profound idea than that. You know the idea of xenophobia? you know, fear or hatred of foreigners or people that are different to you. Xenophobia. Xeno means sort of the different bunch, the foreigner. Phobia, fear or hatred or whatever. Xenophobia. You don't like people that are different to you. This word is exactly the opposite. It is literally xenophilia. Philia being love. This is love of those who are very different to you. It's a welcome, a warm embrace, and a drawing in of those you wouldn't naturally click with at all. Which may well be brilliantly expressed by having someone over for a meal. Wonderful. But showing hospitality to each other is to warmly welcome and include and care for each other despite whatever barriers exist between us and someone. So you see already, verses 8 and 9, the quality of relationships there should be in the church. Deep love, warm hospitality, which I have to say can't be expressed very well sitting in rows facing forwards. Can it? Now, again, my point is not that we shouldn't do that, but if we equate this with all that church is, we have completely lost the plot. The verses we're going to focus on, though, are verses 10 and 11, which speak about everyone playing their part, our third vision and value statement. I'm going to use two headings. They basically say the same thing, but it gives me a chance to repeat myself. For those of you who know Dan Strange, he was at Knighton's, lots of us came from Knighton's. For those who know Dan Strange, he always had bad grammar and spoke, awfully. Amazing, intelligent man. But he was like a theologian from the East End who said, in it, at the end of describing God. He had a couple of brilliant headings, which I've nicked completely, which make use of his bad grammar. Okay, so here they are. First one, we're not on lookers, we're looker-afterers. Okay? We're not onlookers, we're looker-afterers. Verse 10. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others. Notice Peter thinks we have each received a gift of some kind, some capacity, some ability that God has given us. We each have such gifts. Elsewhere in the New Testament, we can read lists of them. That passage in 1 Corinthians 12, we looked at earlier, has a list of gifts. So does Romans 12. There are a variety around. Here, there's no list. If you glance at verse 11, you'll see Peter just divides them into two broad categories, speaking and serving. Saying stuff to people and doing stuff for people. And you may well be aware that some of us are more gifted at the speaking bit, and some of us are more gifted at the serving, practical bit. Now, Peter's point is not to try and spell out all the different gifts involved. He just wants to say, whatever gift you have, whatever ability you have, use it. Use it to serve each other. It's like God has put a tool in your hands. He's gone round and given you each one. You've all got one. Now use it. Get on with it. Use whatever gift he's given you to serve those around you. Notice then that God doesn't give you a gift for your own enjoyment or for your own benefit. He's not given you a gift so that you can feel useful or even that you can be fulfilled in using it in the life of the church. He's given you a gift to serve the people sitting around you. It's not for you. It's for them. And so we are not to be onlookers, but looker-afterers. Not those who stand on the sideline and watch the game, but those who get involved. Serving each other with whatever gift we have, caring for each other, speaking to each other, using our abilities for the good of those around us. I thought it might be worth just a brief aside here about this idea of gifting and the idea of sort of general responsibilities we have in the church. So I think sometimes it gets confusing. People sometimes say, I won't do that, that's not my gift. And then you think, well, hang on, aren't there things that we should all be doing? That sort of thing. So let me just make a couple of comments. This isn't from this passage. This is just a comment from across the New Testament. There are both specific gifts we have, which this passage in 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12 talk about, and there are general responsibilities we all have. So, for example, we should all show hospitality to each other. That's not, it's not, you know, someone might be particularly good at it, but we should all do it. Yeah? For example, we should all teach each other. We should all carry one another's burdens. We should spur one another on. We should care for one another. We should pray for one another. We should love one another. And so on. But then you see, some people are particularly gifted at some of those. So there's teach one another, and there's the gift of teaching. And so I take it, while we should all be having a go at teaching each other, some people are better at it, and they should give themselves to it more. Some people, we're told, are particularly gifted in encouragement. But we're also told, encourage one another. So we should all be encouraging to each other, but some people are really good at it, and they should give their time to it more. So you see, I shouldn't say to myself, for example, I'm kind of assuming I have something of a gift of teaching. I kind of hope you agree. I shouldn't say to myself, that's my gift, so I'm not going to do anything else. I have no other responsibilities. Oh, lots of other responsibilities. We all have this general baseline of what should be done, and then we each have our speciality as well. But the big point is, we are not then onlookers, but looker-afterers. We gather together as church to look after each other, to serve one another, and indeed to be served and looked after ourselves. So I come saying to myself, who can I serve? Who can I speak to? Who can I encourage? Who can I spur on? What can I do for someone? How can I help them? And I come thinking, I want people to do that to me and to receive. Which means we must do more than sit in rows, facing forwards. That's why I'm so glad the majority of us here are in home groups. I'll come back to home groups in a minute. I'm so glad when we finish this sort of first part of our time together in the morning, half of us don't head straight out the door, but we stay so that we can talk to each other. When we started, we actually spoke about the second half of our morning. This is the first half, together, gathered, sitting in rows. The second half is hanging around, talking to each other. But both are important. Whereas if you think of church as a meeting, we think we're done. We're finished when we've sat down at the end. And so whether I stay or not, well, that's if I've got a bit of free time. That's not important. No, that's vital. We'll come back to this at the end in applying it. We are not onlookers, we are looker-afterers. Secondly, we are not passengers, we're passer-onners, honorers, or something. Passer-onners, let's call them that. Verse 10 goes on. You should serve each other as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. How do you serve each other? You serve each other with your gift as a faithful or a good steward. Now, by steward, he means like a manager, someone who's put in charge of something. It's like someone lending you their car or their house while they're away or whatever, and you are to look after it and use it well on their behalf. You are a steward of it. It's not yours, but you're entrusted with it to use it for someone else. Well, here, you are a steward of God's grace, God's goodness, his generosity and his kindness. You are in charge of using it well on his behalf for other people. And I think this is an amazing thought. God has given us these abilities, these gifts, to serve each other. And in doing that, as you speak to someone and encourage them, teach them, spur them on, as you care for someone practically, what you are doing is you are passing on God's grace to them. You become like a little dispenser of God's grace to other people. Like the channel God is using to bless them. And so church life, if it doesn't sound too chaotic, should be a little bit like a giant game of pass the parcel, with lots of parcels, where we're given God's grace, his goodness, and we immediately pass it on to someone else, looking to see who we can use it in someone's life. Although if you ever watched kids play pass the parcel, it comes along the row, they're eyeing it up, they take it, and their arms move incrementally, gradually, waiting for the music, and then pausing, do I, can I, no, and then if it stops just there, I'll go back. It's hilarious. It's going, go and pass it on, just pass it. Anyway, perhaps it's just my children, I don't know. We are not to be reluctant like that, wanting to keep things to ourselves. We want to pass it on. Now, this completely changes the way we view our kind of serving of each other in church life, I think. Just think of the scenario when someone serves you. Someone uses their gift in your life. They say something to you that's helpful. A word of wisdom of some kind that helps you in a situation or that clarifies something for you in a home group discussion. Or rebukes you even over something and you realize you needed that reprimand. Or someone serves you practically, time spent visiting you, meals offered, lifts given, whatever it was, you're the recipient somehow. Yeah? What do you think is happening there? We should think at that moment, God is being really gracious to me. God is showing his goodness, his generosity, his kindness in my life. I'm receiving God's grace in its various forms. I'm receiving it through that person, but all they're doing is passing it on. They're just the steward of it. God gifted them so that they could administer God's grace to me. And so, as it were, I look through them and I see God being kind to me. And so I thank the person. Thank you for that comment. Thank you for that care. Of course we do. But I also look through them and thank God for his care and kindness. He's the ultimate source of it. It's a bit like if someone gives you a present, you know, I don't know, they send you flowers or a cake or something, but they can't bring it round themselves, and someone brings it round for them. And you say, thank you very much for bringing it round, that was very kind of you. But you then get on the phone to the person who sent it, because they're the source of it. You don't focus on the person who brought it to you. And so when we are blessed by people speaking, serving, for sure we thank them for being a good steward of God's grace. But we look through them and we see God caring for us, God being kind to us. That's how we should think when we are the recipient. But this also, of course, changes the way we think about how we give to others, how we go about speaking and serving. Verse 11, if you speak then, you should do so as the one who speaks the very words of God. If you serve, you should do so with the strength God provides. We should see ourselves as those who pass on God's goodness to people. And so if that's speaking, we think of it as passing on God's words. Not our own insights or our own wisdom, we're speaking for God. Now this, of course, has particular relevance to someone like me speaking in a situation like this. And I should say to myself, I'm speaking kind of on behalf of God here. I want to be very careful in what I say. I want to speak as he'd want me to speak, and so on. But it still applies to our other forms of speaking to each other, our teaching of each other, encouraging someone you think is flagging in their life for God, challenging someone who you think is turning away from God. And we approach such situations as speaking God's words, whatever God would want us to say in that situation. And in serving each other, we serve with the strength God provides. So that I think of my care for someone as God's care for that person, shown through me, just like my words are God's words, spoken through me. So it's not my energy and effort, it's his. Now I have to tell you, I do have an ongoing question as to what this means in practice. What does it look like when I'm serving with the strength that God provides as opposed to kind of in my own strength, which is a great Christian cliche, but I'm still not quite sure what it means. I do think, even when we're serving in God's strength, we do still feel, you know, sort of tired and exhausted and that sort of thing. It's not that we're given some superhuman energy that just means we can just keep going because God's strengthening me. Paul talks in Colossians about how he labours and struggles, and the word he uses is a word of great physical effort, but he says he labours and struggles with all of God's energy working in him. So it's like I'm working really hard and I'm really struggling, but I'm aware it's coming from God. So it seems to be a kind of a both and. I'm aware of the experience of giving myself, but God is strengthening me in it. I still have a question about what that looks like. I do think, though, it means that as we go about serving each other, we should look to God and ask God for the energy to do so, just as we might ask God to give us the appropriate words to speak to someone. That is what is happening when we are using our gifts in the life of the church. We are looking after each other. We're looker afterers. We are passing on God's grace to each other. We are passer oners. A few implications for us. First of all, this understanding of gifting in the church completely removes pride. We cannot pat ourselves on the back and say, well done me for that bit of teaching, that appropriate word, that insight, that care, that visit, whatever it was that we've done for someone. We can think of ourselves as faithful stewards. Yeah, I've been faithful with what God has given me. We can think of ourselves that way. And I think there should be a right sense of thinking, yeah, God has given me that gift and I've used it for him and I'm glad that's happened. But I'm only a steward. I'm passing it on. I'm grateful he's gifted me, but he's the one who gave it as a gift. I think I've mentioned this quote before, but I love it so much and it always bears repeating. Richard Baxter was a minister in the 17th century who you'd say was remarkably sort of successful in terms of the impact he had on his town of Kidderminster. And in reflecting on what had happened in that town and his ministry, he said, "I was but a pen in God's hand. I was but a pen in God's hand. And what praise is due a pen?" You don't look at a pen and go, "Oh, you wrote that brilliantly, pen." I was the agent. He used me. And we should expect that to be the case because God has designed the church where we are looker-afterers and passer-oners. His grace only comes through people. But it's not from us. We're tools in God's hands. No pride. This understanding of gifts means that we welcome and we value everyone's contribution in the life of the church. If you were here last week, you know we were thinking about teaching. Stu was leading us. And we saw there was a particular role for church leaders. Peter believed that himself. Chapter 5, he goes on and talks to the elders of the church. But those passages which talk about the particular role of people like church leaders in teaching and so on have to be held together with passages like this, which speak about everyone having a role. Because we all have a gift to use. They are different gifts. And so some people have a more kind of prominent leadership role. But we all have a role. We all play our part. And there is to be no elevating of one kind of gift above another. See, Peter speaks in this passage of speaking gifts and serving gifts. Words we speak to each other, things we do for each other. It would be very easy, I think, in a church like this, the way we would tend to go is to elevate the speaking and to not appreciate the serving. But he says, you speak as speaking God's word, you serve with God's energy. It's the same principle operating in each. It's passing on God's grace in each. Now, there is to be no elevation of one grouping of gifts. Rather, there is to be a welcome and a valuing of all, so that everyone's contribution is drawn in and used. Lastly, this view of gifts very simply means we must be a church where everyone plays their part. That's our vision and value statement, our third one. A church where everyone plays their part. I hope you see how important that is. How do we work this out? Let me just throw out a few things. We're going to discuss this in home groups this week. But just throw out a few ideas. It has implications for Sundays here. Chris mentioned that we wanted a variety of people involved up the front here to picture exactly this idea. I've said from the start, if I'm speaking, like I am now preaching on a Sunday morning, except for unusual circumstances, that's probably all I should ever be doing that Sunday, because other people should be involved. So I won't lead a service and then preach in it, because we've got more people that can do that. Why would I monopolize? We want to picture in a small way this everyone involved in the way we structure our Sundays. I've mentioned staying behind. Staying for the second part of our morning so that we interact with each other on a Sunday rather than just thinking it's staying behind if I've got a bit of time. It means being involved in small groups. I think home groups is where a lot of this really gets worked out. It means volunteering to be on a whole variety of rotors, whether it's things for tea and coffee or for creche or for Sunday club or for music or for PA or for a projector or any other things that we occasionally mention. But it means most of all interaction with each other where we are looking to serve each other. It means a community where we are prepared to give and to receive. And that is actually quite countercultural. We pick up in our culture today a kind of individualistic, independent, self-sufficient sort of thing. So that to say, I need people, is seen as a sign of weakness. And to say, I'm responsible for people, I must get involved in their life, is seen as being a bit intrusive. You see how this cuts across that? No, each of us is to get involved in each other's lives, and each of us is to welcome that involvement. I need you to speak to me, to encourage me, to teach me, to remind me. I need you to serve me practically and care for me. Each of us needs that from each other. And the moment we think church is something I can sit in and leave, we've completely lost the plot. This is fundamentally about the closeness of our relationships, living in dependence on each other and giving to each other. And so you might be on a rota, you might not be on a rota for something. In a sense, that's irrelevant. We need people on rotas because stuff has to happen. And it's one way of using your gift, but that might be the best way for you. You might be brilliant at welcoming new people. You know, so don't get involved in PA, because I want you hanging around at the beginning welcoming people. So don't worry about whether you're on a rota or not. Ask yourself, what is my interaction with people? So if you're not involved here at Avenue, if you're going to come and be part of this church, I want to tell you that you need to be involved. You've got to get involved. Maybe in a rota, certainly in a small group, but primarily in terms of building relationships with people where this will happen. And if you are involved already, as many, many of us are, and I'm so grateful to God for how this has worked out so far in our 2 years, can I just ask you, how are you feeling about being involved? Because it's very easy for it to become a bit of a grind, a bit of a burden, start getting a bit fed up with what I have to do each week because I'm on that rota. Or go to home group this week, I'm just a bit bored with it all actually, and I'm feeling a bit tired, so maybe I won't. And perhaps having thrown ourselves in with a little bit of enthusiasm, we can easily take a mental step backwards. And we're still involved, but our heart isn't actually in it. And we need to look at this sort of passage again and remind ourselves of what is going on. We're looking after each other with God's gifts. We're passing on God's grace to each other. This is how he's designed the church. This is how we're to live together. We're going to do what we've done the last couple of weeks. What I want you to do is to turn to a neighbour, twos, threes, whatever's most helpful. We've only got a couple of minutes. I want you to ask, what are the big questions about this and how this gets lived out in our life? What do we need to be asking ourselves and discussing so that we work this out more? We're going to write down the questions. They'll form the basis of part of our discussions in our home groups. So what are the big questions about how this gets worked out? You've got about a minute to talk to your neighbour. Go. Okay. Questions? I'm going to write them down. We're not going to answer them now, but you can answer them over coffee and tea. From this group here, particular questions? Yeah, Ian.
Should students be involved in home groups? Or should they be involved?
Students and home groups. Very good. We'll think about that. Yeah.
How can we be more aware of what our gifts are so that we can use them for the church?
How can we be more aware of our gifts? Yeah. Very interesting that none of the passages in the New Testament do a kind of how to find your gift thing. But so it's just interesting to reflect on how do we do that, because I think that's a very common question. Any more from here? Dave?
Are there enough specific things to use your gifts in?
Are there enough specific, what sort of roles or something? Are there enough roles to use your gifts in? I'll allow myself the odd comment. I think that comes back to the idea of not everything can be put on sort of a rota. A lot of stuff just happens as we interact. So if you have a gift of encouragement, You know, we don't have an encouragement rota. You know, it's my turn. I'm encouraging people this week. Would you like to encourage you? No, no. If you have the gift of encouragement, you discover, I think, that as you talk to people, that you spur them on. And I want that person off all rotas. I just want them interacting with people. So quite often it's not a case of finding a role as much as interacting with each other and looking to do what we can. And that we find when we find ourselves speaking the right words or doing the right thing. Tim?
How can we find space and time to offer hospitality during the week, on some Sundays or when?
Space and time for hospitality. Thank you very much. Middle block, questions.
What's the benefit of using your gift for yourself and those that you're actually using them for?
Benefit for you and others of using your gifts? Yeah. I'll again allow myself a quick comment because I just can't help myself. This passage doesn't specifically say what the result is. 1 Corinthians 12 and Romans 12 say a lot more about how it builds each other up in the faith, and so it's basically for each other's spiritual good and for the living out of our life as a church. If we're a family, then we're to care for each other. Some people are gifted in caring in certain ways. I think of my own kind of nuclear family with, you know, my sister and my brothers and stuff. My sister was particularly good at doing certain things in family life, expressing family life. And so what benefit does it have? It builds us in the faith and it lives out family life together. Benefit to you? I don't think the New Testament ever talks about that. I think it's more concerned about you helping them than how I might be helped. Which in a culture of finding self-fulfillment and self-actualization and so on is an interesting thought. Any more from here?
Something about, is it a to disengage? we were kind of thinking of difficult times.
Yeah.
Is when it becomes quite burdensome.
Yeah, are there times when we might be more of a recipient and less of a giver? And can you actually make that kind of decision? It's a very good question. Yeah, Liz.
In the same way as when we looked at being a loving family, we kind of sort of become a responsibility to the immediate church family.
Yep.
Do we have, say, like a hierarchy of responsibility to serving, to sort of maybe, I know, serving people in our pew and then in our this church family and then our Grace church family? Does it follow the same?
Okay, good question. Grace.
We just have a question of time.
Question of time, yeah.
To say this clearly, because you mentioned the culture of being like on its own and individualistic. It's not only a matter of culture,
yep.
But there are also like real hard constraints that force this,
yeah. Yeah.
And enforce this. So it's yeah. Not only like about ideas, yeah. But also about
the
facts of life.
Yeah, the practicalities, the facts of life means there's very limited time, and how will this then get worked out? Very good question. We've got to move on. Last block. Thoughts, Alice?
Given the limited time, how do they balance that against spending time with people you know who are Christians, and how do you prioritise being part of the wider world and being part of people who aren't churches?
Yep, very good question. You could easily run with this and then not know anybody else, and so on. We could become very insular with this, which is why we must hear next week's sermon about reaching out. But very good question. Terry?
I don't know if it might be more tempting, but sometimes people say, I've been doing too much, and then sit back and just receive the word.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. Is it okay to step? Yeah. Any more? Jan?
I think it would be a good communicating with each other, especially the people in charge of the church, to see how we can avoid having to, if we are gifted in certain ways, how can we make use of it?
Yeah.
To benefit the whole group.
Yeah. Yeah, so people actually, in a sense, offering gifts. Saying, I can do this, I can do that. I love people walking up to me and saying, I'm coming regularly, what can I do? And just offering, whether it's specific abilities or just the general offer. A lot of it, as I say, will get lived out as we just get involved in each other's lives, but some of it can be coordinated and organised. It's a mixture of the two, and we mustn't, I think we mustn't run in one or two directions. We mustn't think all of this can be rotated, organised from the front, and have some great network which will get us all doing things. But then again, it mustn't just be left as a kind of mass where there's no organisation at all. It's a mixture of those two. Great questions. Think about them more as we have coffee and tea and stuff. Think about them in home groups this week. If you want to discuss stuff more, we do now have a discussion board on our website. So go to the website, click on discussion board. You can add your thoughts on this one or on past weeks. I think given the time, we're going to stop. What we'll do is just have a moment's reflection and pray together. So let's just have a moment's quiet, and I'll lead us in prayer. Just think perhaps about your attitude in serving each other, in being a steward of God's grace, and receiving that from other people. Father God, we thank you that in Christ you have made us one body. We have been baptized by the Spirit into that one body. And we each have different roles to play. We are each a part of it, but we are different parts. And so there is great unity and there is great diversity. And we ask, Father God, that you'd help each of us in playing our part in the life of this church for the good of each other, and ultimately that you may be praised and glorified in all that you are doing in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.